Kamau, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You recently wrote in Truthout that the idea of Cop City came after the uprisings in 2020, when the police perpetrated murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and here in Atlanta, Rashad Brooks, began a new call for defunding and or abolishing the police. Kamau, has citizen action put police on the defensive? And if so, to what end?
I think at one point, the police were really on the defensive based on citizen action, based on organizing and activism. I think the 2020 uprisings, both in Atlanta, nationally, and across the world, in terms of like solidarity or support, really started to emphasize the idea that public safety would not get solved by putting more police into communities, and that the tactics and training, ideology, and methodology of the police was a danger to communities and not anything that was stopping crime. But then I think there was a shift that had happened post that, that corporations, that the media, particularly corporate media, and the elected officials and or politicians sort of did a dance and did everything they can to rehabilitate the police to the larger community and try to put the cause of defunding, the cause of abolishing, the cause of public finding alternatives to public safety on the defensive. And so I think we're at a stage where, you know, now there's this resurgence of overt police killings that are happening that are getting attention. But I think we're really in this weird stage where organizers and activists and people in the community who are concerned about police violence are struggling to figure out what are the changes that we can make. At the same time, the police and the authorities are attempting to continually act as if it's a one bad apple thing and try to keep and expand policing, particularly militarized policing, in Atlanta and across the country.
Before the Atlanta City Council approved the Cop City Center in 2021, 17 hours of public comments documented a majority in opposition to the project. Did corporate supporters wield influence during the approval process?
Corporate supporters most definitely wield influence. They were the ones who gave $60 million to make this project happen. Behind the scenes, a lot of the corporations, along with the Atlanta Police Foundation, pushed to make this happen. There's a particular part of Atlanta called Buckhead, which is really where a lot of business headquarters are, where folks who have a lot of money live. They pushed for this to happen. And all of this was done even though Atlanta's mayor, city council, knew that the majority of the city was against having a cop city here.
DeKalb County Commissioner Ted Terry cites a lack of transparency and accountability in the planning process. He says that local officials' claims have not been open to community engagement. Your thoughts on how this is unfolded?
I think he's exactly correct. Since the very beginning, the city of Atlanta refused to do any public hearings. It was only under pressure that they held one public hearing. And at that public hearing, they refused to take questions from the audience. Instead, they had people write things down and they picked and choose what it is that they would, what they would respond to. Other than that, they've done nothing whatsoever to talk through their plan, their idea, their strategy. So this has been something that they tried to push through since the very beginning. And again, once it started to leak out, then organizers and activists and community members really tried to fight against this happening because they knew on its face that this was not a call of action that people were hoping for, that after the 2020 uprisings, people were hoping for reform and change, not for more militarized policing.
Kamau, Community Movement Builders, the organization you founded, is a member of Stop Cop City. Please tell us about this initiative.
Well, Stop Cop City is I would call it less of an initiative and more of a movement. So it's a decentralized, autonomous group of organizers, activists, community members, environmentalists, civil rights people, who all for various reasons have come out and decided to work together and say that we want to stop Cop City. And so that means people use various tactics, various strategies, sometimes we check in with each other. Sometimes we obviously support each other's public actions. But it's really an autonomous movement of various actors who are opposed to Cop City. And we are one of the earliest folks to be out there, probably one of the leading Black organizations to take a stand against this. But it's truly a movement that has a large bandwidth in terms of the amount of people who are supporting the idea that we don't want Cop City to happen.
Kamau, how have Atlanta police treated the protesters who've camped out on the proposed site for the center? With an example or two, if you can.
Sure. I think the police have used very violent tactics against the protesters in the forest, as we call them, forest defenders. We should add that since the very beginning of the opposition to Cop City, that at demonstrations in the streets, the police have again used violent tactics and have arrested dozens of protesters. And so the tactics by the police started very early on when we were protesting in the street. But in the forest itself, as you might know by now, over 19 people have been arrested and charged with acts of domestic terrorism. And we should say, particularly for the folks who've been charged in the forest, everyone who was arrested at the time was arrested either in the forest at their camp or in a tree hut. They weren't involved in any activity whatsoever that could be described as domestic terrorism. So we think the criminalization of organizers and activists, particularly the forest defenders, is another tactic by the city, by the police, at this stage by the state government to stop the movement against Cop City.
Kamau, contempt of cop describes how police officers physically punish civilians when they perceive them to be disobedient or disrespectful. But now, body-worn cameras don't seem to deter the disproportionate use of police force. Why do you think this is, and what are the shortcomings of body-worn cameras?
Well, I think the reason it is because the training, the tactics, the methodology, the ideas of the police remain the same. And those ideas are that they are here to be in control of every situation. They are taught that they are working in criminal neighborhoods with criminals afoot, and that they should be scared of people who they come in contact with. And in some ways, they are to either shoot or command and take command of the situation first before anything bad happens to them. That is the training they get. That is the perspective that they have. And so it is no wonder that just because there is body cameras, that the sort of brutal or physically violent tactics of the police have not relented. Those tactics will continue. And so body cameras have been good in documenting certain interactions between the police and the public. They are the ways in which we've found out about a lot of different things that otherwise we would have to rely on the police version of events. So in that sense, they're good, but they're not a tool that's going to prevent police brutality, because the methodology of the police, the militarized posture of the police, is the thing that keeps them doing the things that they do in our communities.
What was the police explanation for using gunfire on January 8th that killed Stop Cop City activist known as Tortuguita? Is self-defense a common reason police give for using lethal force?
It's probably one of the most overwhelming reason, or the most overwhelming reason that they give for using lethal force. It was the threat of obviously bodily harm to themselves. It doesn't matter if that threat turns out to be accurate or not, but at the time of the incident or any incident, the police usually write that they were either being attacked, they were being threatened, they sense a threat, and that seems to justify the use of physical violence, i.e. either shooting, beating, tasering, pepper spraying, whatever it is, against demonstrators and activists. In the forest in that day, the police version of events is that a task force of police that included Atlanta police, DeKalb County police, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, state troopers, SWAT teams, and even to some media reports, the FBI, none of them had body cameras on or turned on. Atlanta is required to have body cameras turned on, but yet there is no body cam imagery of what took place. So we are left with the narrative that the police provided, which is that Tortuguita shot a single shot at them, and then they shot back. From reports we got in the community, folks who heard a burst of gunfire, they did not hear a single shot, a slight pause, and then more shots. They heard a single burst of gunfire. And so we find it hard to believe, highly, highly unlikely, that a person sitting in a cloth tent surrounded by police officers, over a dozen police officers, would shoot a single bullet after being warned to come out of their tent, knowing that basically they would be committing suicide by doing so. So we think this tale that the police are telling is one that fits their own narrative of the forest defenders being violent, but isn't the truth at all. And we need an independent investigation to get to the truth of what happened in the forest that day.
My co-host Heidi Bogosian and I, Marjorie Cohn, are speaking with Kamau Franklin about Stop Cop City and police violence. Kamau, soon after Tortuguita's murder, five Memphis police officers tortured and murdered Tyree Nichols. What does this say about how police are trained and supervised and a police culture of systemic violence, especially against people of color?
It says that even after the uprisings we've had in 2020 and before that, even with the extensive training that the police continually get, so the officer who shot and killed Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta received over 2,000 hours of training. Training on de-escalation tactics, training on cultural sensitivity, it made no difference whatsoever. The officers in Memphis were college-educated officers who had received hundreds, at least, hours of training, if not more, but they still resorted to acts of violence in terms of using their gun to solve a problem. This is what they are. This is their very mentality in the police department. It is about shooting first and asking questions later. This is not an issue of better training. This is not an issue of the amount of sensitivity training they get or anything of the like. This is an institution which treats citizens in this country as if they are occupied peoples or criminals who need to be taken down as opposed to providing public safety. So we think nothing's going to happen with a militarized police force to change their ways. It's the system of policing itself that needs to be done away with, not anything around training or body cameras, which is going to stop these killings from happening.
Kamau, please tell us about some of the reforms that Community Movement Builders recommends for reforming law enforcement practices in the United States.
We think there has to be the idea that there has to be less contact between the community and the police. So starting there, we think for any traffic stops, for issues around mental health, for issues around houseless people, that the police should not be involved in those whatsoever, that it should be folks who are trained to either give out tickets and to keep it moving, folks who are not armed, not engaging with the public, that only in those ways will we lessen the actual contact between the police and members of the community. Secondly, we think the police need to be demilitarized, and it needs to be community control over how the police operate. Any public safety arm operates in the community. And what we mean by that is, instead of giving these officers militarized equipment and them having ranks and so forth, which makes them feel like a military operation, these night units which go into the community unabated and pick off or stop anybody that they so choose, that all of that has to be ended. Further, that we need to have civilian control over the police, which means that any issue involving the police and people in the community, it is that the people in the neighborhood can have the power to hire, fire, discipline anybody who's supposed to be working on behalf of public safety in the community. We can only demilitarize and give community control over public safety as the valve which is going to solve the issues of police killings and criminal activity in our community.
Kamau, are there any similar initiatives or model practices underway anywhere across the country. And what do you think of the George Floyd Policing Act?
I think there are some initiatives that stop short of doing everything, of course, that we want them to do. But there's initiatives even here in Atlanta. There's a policing alternatives division called PAD, which sends out people from the neighborhood who are not police officers to deal with issues of houselessness or houseless people so that the police are not called on those. Again, it's a relatively speaking small program that's not funded well, but it's these kind of alternatives that need to be propped up and need to be looked at as solutions to criminal activity in our neighborhood by the police. So I don't think the George Floyd Act, again, goes far enough because we're not getting to the root of the issue, which is the militarized nature of the police, the top-down structure, the methodology of using violence and violent tactics against the community as the first thing that they do. Having people who are mostly not part of those communities but are brought into the propaganda system of that they're dealing with basically a criminal element no matter where they look, and that their first response is to gain control of the community. Unless, again, we dig deep and solve that problem, no legislative initiative is going to solve it because they are just going to be Band-Aids on a system that is rotten to its core.
And you've answered this next question in several ways, but what do you say to critics who say that the campaign of defunding the police is unrealistic and hurts those who advocate for it?
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily unrealistic, as in if we stick to the old ideas that either the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which never has real power to discipline the police, or body cameras, which again don't deal with the methodology of what's happening, making certain holds or chokehold illegal doesn't stop the police from engaging in certain activities. So the idea that we can sort of reform our way out of this with legislative reform that doesn't get to the root of the issue is really unrealistic on itself, right? And so the idea is that the Black community in particular must continue to endure not only the police killings that take place, but the day-to-day violence that happens based on the police activities, the over-arrest, the stop and frisk, the harassment. Once folks are arrested, the judicial system, which gives higher sentences, the prison is filled, overpopulated with Black and brown folks in these prisons based on the very work of the police on the street. And so unless we're looking to solve those real problems, we're going to be stuck with this system of small reforms, and then we're going to have uprisings every 2 years because it's not going to solve the problem.
Kamau, can you offer any words of hope as we witness the public torture and execution of people of color at the hands of the police?
Well, less words of hope, more words of resistance, that unless we as a larger community in the United States decide to attack this problem from a different angle in a different way, we're going to be stuck with what we have. But if we really do decide to look at how policing operates and to go a different way, we could do a lot to solve a lot of the issues that we have. So I think it's really about organizing in the community. It's about getting folks to understand what's happening. It's about creating an alternative to how the police operate. It's about challenging public officials. It's about challenging corporations. And I think only in that way, through people power, can we create the difference that we want.
Kamau, how can our listeners follow your own excellent work in resistance?
But they can follow us, you know, through social media channels. Community Movement Builders is our handle. And they can also follow us on our webpage, communitymovementbuilders.org.
Kamau, thank you so much for your history of community activism and for joining us today on Law and Disorder.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.